Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I am joined by Astrid Clout. Astrid is a managing director for Accenture in their Salesforce practice in Sydney. Through the episode, we look at Astrid's Salesforce career, how she got started in this space, and the kind of project she was involved in, looking back around 16 years ago when she was working out of London, delivering large global transformations on the Salesforce platform at that time. It was really interesting to understand the challenges that she was facing back then, and then compare that to the challenges and complexities that we now face when implementing Salesforce solutions. We look at the roles that Astrid has played over the years, and what Salesforce teams looked like in the earlier days. Then we look at why Astrid was keen to get into consulting when she moved back to Australia and the kind of roles that she's played working for a consulting business over the last number of years. We focus on the key ingredients that Astrid feels is really important to having a really successful Salesforce project team. And then we look at what she always looks at or what she looks for in people that she's hiring, both technical and non-technical skills. So a really interesting episode if you want to look back at what Salesforce was back in the early 2000s and compare that to what it's like now, and to get an insight into someone like Astrid and what she would look for when hiring for her team and ensuring project success. I hope you enjoy this episode, and if you do, please subscribe for future episodes that are coming through.
Cool. Astrid, thank you very much for joining us today.
Nice to see you, Ben.
Yeah, very nice to see you, actually, to see people from the ecosystem in these times. So yeah, look, we've got some really interesting stuff to run through. And I remember being at a Salesforce user group and hearing about your journey in the Salesforce world when you were overseas. So yeah. Keen to hear more about that today. But I'd like to start way back when and look before the world of Salesforce. So can you give us a little bit of insight into kind of what you did before Salesforce, what you wanted to be, who you were back then?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Sydney's Northern Beaches, and I went to an all-girls school, and I was one of three people who did computing studies for my HSC. So I was really lucky that they even ran that course. And at the time, I actually had my eyes set on forensic science. But as it turned out, I was drawn to the technology side of things. So that teacher, over those 2 years in year 11 and 12, he opened my mind to what was possible. And I got myself into a Bachelor of Information Technology at UTS and studied here for 3 years. And from there, I was just surprised at all of the options that were available. I think, you know, growing up, STEM wasn't really a thing at the time, but I could see for myself that there was lots of things going on. So I got myself into a grad program with BT Financial Group, and that's really where my IT journey started. And so I did a bunch of different roles there, business analysis and web design, and did some training courses and all sorts of different activities on a rotation program. And over the next three or so years, I noticed that a lot of my friends were doing the backpacking thing, and I was getting a bit jealous. So after about 3.5 years at BT, I put on my backpack and was bound for London. So I went via Canada and Europe and landed in London Paddington Station with very little money to my name, and knew that getting a job was the next most important thing. And so from that point, I think the business analysis side was probably my strength. I'd had a few years up my sleeve. And within a week, I was really, really lucky, in the right place at the right time, and got myself a BA role with a global wealth management company. And that's where my contracting life began.
And that was a BA role on a Salesforce project or not into the world of Salesforce just yet?
Not quite. Actually, I was employed to roll out an in-house CRM application, and we had a pilot site in Germany, in Frankfurt. So my role was basically to work with that business over in Frankfurt to see what they needed and what was different to the UK version of the application. And then, you know, basically check things like the speed at which it performed and, you know, usability and things like that. So thank goodness we did that pilot because it was a massive fail. It was non-performant. It didn't scale. It was just sluggish all round. And this is, I think, when on-premise solutions were still a thing, very much a thing. But luckily for us, our colleagues over in New York had been having some conversations with Salesforce. And we got chatting, and within a couple of weeks of this pilot, we realized that we'd like to take the plunge with Salesforce. So they quickly stood up a project team, and we were one of the first groups to do a private in-house system admin course. That was back in 2004, so more than 16 years ago.
It's crazy, isn't it? And it's interesting because back then people really did fall into Salesforce, but now it's like a career of choice, right? So many people are trying to transition. So do you remember, was it kind of having been involved in a pilot that didn't work, then looking at Salesforce, was it love at first sight and this is going to be the answer to all of our problems?
It was something quite different from what I'd experienced before. I had done a lot of like intranet and internet work in my earlier role. So the fact that you could get things done so quickly just with drag and drop was amazing. There was no sandboxes, there was no integration, there was no coding. So it meant that you could do things very fast and very simply. So we were able to reach something like 23 countries within an 18-month or so period.
That's great. I mean, even for today, that would be a massive project.
Yes. Yeah, it was a big, big project. It was a sales transformation. And then I think, you know, in parallel with us on this project, Salesforce was innovating at the same time. So we were getting the benefits of everything that was coming with Salesforce. And I do remember, I think it was the launch of the App Exchange or something like that. And suddenly you could bring sales and marketing together in one place. And it was like such a game changer. And then, you know, as time went on, it was like, oh, you can become a Salesforce developer and there's coding and you can extend it. I think the just really, truly understanding the impacts of what you're doing when you're working in a live environment, that was something that I, you know, I'll always remember because, you know, you're impacting a lot of people. And I think our fearless system administrators have that sort of role in their everyday lives.
Sure. And it's, you know more than most how big Salesforce project teams can be now. Obviously, you've been involved in some of the biggest programs in ANZ most recently as well. But back then, if there were no developers, there was no code, like what did a project team actually look like?
It's interesting because reflecting, the name of my role was implementation specialist. So what that meant was that I was a combination of a business analyst, functional consultant, change manager, trainer, and did a bit of data migration too. So it was a bit of a jack of all trades, but similar to what we do today, it was about doing research, understanding current processes, if there were any, doing workshops for what the future state would look like, then, you know, coming up with a plan of how we were going to achieve those things, and then configuring it myself, doing facilitating UAT and testing with the groups, building out training plans, running training, and then supporting them. So there was a lot of stuff that we used to jam into those projects. So I was looking after, I think in my first project, European countries, and then we had someone looking after the Americas and someone looking after Asia, and then we had project managers and data migration people
as
well.
Yeah, I think now kind of each of those responsibilities that you labeled kind of now has its own role and function within a project. So it's crazy how things have grown.
Yeah.
So can you remember back then what user adoption was like? I mean, user adoption is always a challenge, but was it like, oh, wow, what's this thing that I can now ask for a simple update and it's done in a matter of minutes?
I mean, I think with any sort of major change or major transformation, there's always going to be pockets of resistance. And I think establishing the, you know, super users or change advocates or change champions, whatever they are, that's important no matter the size of the project. But back then, it was so different for people that they could, you know, be at their work PC and then they could go home and also access the stuff and access their contacts from their BlackBerries and record emails between Outlook and the CRM, and all of those things made people very, very excited. So there was huge amounts of change that was going on at that time. Even mobile applications were not really a thing back then in 2004-5. So all of the things that Salesforce were bringing to the table between the mobile, Outlook, and browser-based cloud software, they were all easy selling points for us. So adoption was typically an easier sell. I was working a lot with salespeople, so they were naturally protective of their data, and the program of work that I was on, it was a globally open model. So this was also really different. KPIs were able to be measured in clicks rather than, you know, sending off spreadsheets at the end of each week to say how many calls people had done or how many deals they'd made. They were able to establish global KPIs across countries, things that were, you know, historically taking a long time to pull together and compile as well. So there was definitely resistance to standardize business processes, but by bringing people together, by understanding why people were resisting, we were learning as we went. The software was new. These new approaches were new. Doing these big global projects was new. So I think having that experiment, reflect, adjust kind of mindset, that helped.
So was that, because obviously as times change, different challenges come along, but back then was the biggest challenge the fact that it was so new and the resources just weren't, and no one kind of would have been able to be pulled into a project with any greater knowledge than you already had?
Yeah, I mean, we were the experts. We'd done a 5-day course. I was lucky to work with some very experienced project management people, and I learned a lot from them about planning and contingency and risks and data and things like that. So I definitely learned a lot from the people in the periphery. But I think the thing about working on these big projects was about the people, learning about the culture of people, learning about leadership styles, what worked, what didn't, even just being able to get people excited about different things. So understanding their surroundings, their background, what was important to them, and trying to think about what are the best bits of Salesforce about this program that can help you be more successful in what you're doing.
And your time in London, it kind of, you stuck with these big programs, right? It wasn't just the one, you then went on to other ones. And I remember the story that you told a user group about spending time in Russia, I think.
Yes, I did. I went to some weird and wonderful countries along the way. And I think one of my most memorable experiences was training a group of salespeople in Moscow. And I had to learn the platform in the translated version. So I was able to navigate that in Russian language. And I had a translator as well. So I had to deliver my training. Then a minute later, the translator would explain what I said. I was meanwhile navigating. And, you know, I'm trying to make it interesting. And there's just a wall of kind of deadpan faces, and every now and again people would be like, oh, and they get quite excited, and that would motivate me to keep going. But it was really tricky. I had I think that was that we had translators in Russia, and we also had translators in Brazil. Most of the other countries had enough Oh, and Japan, actually. Most of the other countries had enough English speakers. But, yeah, working with translators in a training scenario is an experience.
And then so you then found your way back to Australia and your career kind of has stayed in Australia since. At that point, when you came back, what was it about consulting that really interested you?
Yeah, I think I guess I had been consulting across those three big global programs, but I'd been an independent contractor. And when I came back to Australia, I wanted to accelerate my career. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to be, I guess, more accountable for the things that I was doing. And I was passionate about developing others and the people side of things. And in contract roles, even though you might be a project manager or a change manager or leading a work stream, you don't have accountability for other people's growth. And that was important for me. And I'd really felt that over those years, 9 years in London, the coaching and the educating and that I'd done naturally through the training programs and through implementing change, I knew that that was something that I wanted to do in my kind of daily work.
Since moving into consulting, what kind of roles have you personally held?
Yeah, so I think my first role when I got back to Australia was a senior consultant at Cloud Sherpas, whatever that meant. But that was a kind of a combination of functional consulting, solution architecture, project management. There wasn't really a specific, I guess, thing that I was doing. It just depended on the project. So we just got moved around. And then I suppose because I'd done a lot of project management, I sort of naturally moved into those sorts of areas, so running projects, running teams. And then, I guess since then I've moved into more and more senior roles. So I've always had a more of a functional focus. But instead of changing what I was doing, I just did the bigger and the more complex versions of the same thing. And now I guess that's my sweet spot is the delivery lead for the biggest, most complex programs
and,
out there.
And obviously going through that project management route, like how important do you think the foundations of coming through from a functional Salesforce background have been to go down that path and be delivering big Salesforce projects? Like, is that key, or can someone do it without having that Salesforce background?
It's definitely been a huge benefit for me. It means that a lot of decisions, risks, issues I've seen before. It means that a lot of the things that I've learned over those years, a lot of the mistakes that have been made, there's so many I could probably write a book about all the war stories over 16 years, but I think having seen it, having felt it, it just means that I can lead by example, and I can know what's possible, etc. But you know, in saying that, I've seen other people come in with non-Salesforce backgrounds and run really good deliveries as well. But I've just had that benefit, I think, of being in the trenches, doing all sorts of different roles, and now just knowing what it's like.
And 16 or so years on from that first project, what are the complexities that you now kind of come to expect on a big program of work?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of these will probably sound quite obvious. I think the sheer volume of data that we're dealing with these days, I think the complexities of the integrations and the expectations of data being available in real time. I think some of the legacy applications that we're trying to decommission have become very ingrained in the way that businesses operate. So it's trying to, you know, peel back how that those big transformation programs can happen. What else? I mean, I think there's obviously a renewed focus on security. That's a big area that's can't be underestimated in everything we do, especially as we start to, you know, do more stuff with communities and commerce and things like that. And then also the user experience, that for me has always been something in the front of my mind. But it's really important that we never lose sight of that, putting ourselves in the shoes of the users, and making sure that whatever it is that we're implementing is built for them to do their activity in a way that was better than before.
Yeah, I think that's fundamental, right? It's something that kind of people forget, but that's ultimately what the transformation is being done for. So obviously every project is different, and there are, you know, if you're implementing different products, there's different challenges, but what do you feel is the fundamentals of a great Salesforce team? Like, what are the key ingredients for you when you're building a team?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely passion for the platform, not being too narrow-minded in focus, wanting to know what the vision and the goals of the transformation or of the project or of the piece of work is, really truly understanding what that's for, knowing about the people that are going to be using the platform, and as I've said before, putting yourself in the shoes of those users, always thinking about benefit and value and really celebrating successes when there are wins in that space. Always be educating, so educating yourself on what's coming with Salesforce, educating the client about, you know, what we're doing and why, and then I think, you know, developing people around you and then ultimately for the users to understand why they're doing things in certain ways as well. So I think that those are some of the key things that I would.
I guess a lot of that comes back to communication as well, right? I think, you know, you can't deliver an effective project or change without that clear communication. And I think that's obviously been something that's been consistent in all of your projects. That's been key to delivering.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Communication, change management, I think top-down leadership support, it's really, you know, when that's there, when users know that they're being watched and that their work within Salesforce is part of their job, then that tends to really increase adoption, which ultimately makes the whole point of the program of work.
Sure. And obviously leading big teams, you will have been involved in hiring very regularly. Everyone's getting certifications, people are all over Trailhead, but that aside, like, what do you always look for in someone that you're hiring?
It's a great question, and I a big part of my job is hiring and recruitment and people. Attitude, so a willingness to learn, a passion. So it might be that they've got an interest in a specific thing or they're part of the user groups or the community. It's very easy for someone to sit in a dark corner and do Trailheads all day, but, you know, I want to see a little bit of spark. I think having some sort of experience. It doesn't need to be necessarily consulting experience, but some sort of experience where you can relate what you're doing in Salesforce to real life situations and vice versa. Having a naturally curious outlook. A lot of what we do is about listening and interpretation. So the natural curiosity, the empathy, being able to articulate things in a logical, structured manner, because, you know, it's very easy to just talk, but we need, in the way that we think and the way that we need to plan and the way that we need to build things, needs to be logical as well. So I think all of those things, logical thinker, empathy, good listener, clear communications, they're all sorts of things that I would look at, as well as obviously certification.
So many people forget all of that stuff and focus just on the things that, you know, they can show they have, whereas actually there's so much behind what you can get on certifications or Trailhead badges that are equally or sometimes more important.
Yeah, and I think that some of the Trailheads that I've seen that I really love are around the softer side. So there's some things about preparing for a killer demo and things like that. And I just think it's so important to be able to showcase what you've built with a story and with, you know, being able to highlight the benefits, that those are things that are just as important.
I've really enjoyed the chat. Really interesting to hear about your journey in more detail. And I think our audience will really, really appreciate that as well. So thank you very much. And all of the best for these big projects that you're working on.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.